for the world's greatest athletes.
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again!
Goal for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics. Friday, July 26th on NBC and Peacock.
Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League and the Champions League. I'm Robbie Musto, he's Robbie Earl, and here are today's topics. Chelsea squandering a 2-1 lead at West Ham to drop from first to third. Divock Origi coming on to score the late winner for Liverpool at Wolves. Man City continuing to cruise control at the Gaudreau to go top of the table. Ralph Rangnick bailed out by Fred on his managerial debut to come away victorious. Steven Gerrard and Brendan Rodgers reunited at Villa Park, and Newcastle and Eddie Howe finally win their first match of the season. That's what we've got coming up in today's episode. So let's start, Robbie Earl, with Chelsea, that going into the weekend were the top dogs in the Premier League, yep. And both our tips to win the Premier League this season.
I'll leave that all on you.
Yeah, I'm good. Bit of a freakish game, mate. Lots that went on. Chelsea, like, kind of un-Chelsea-like, un-Edouard Mendy, the goalkeeper-like, on a couple of things that we'll talk about. Were you surprised? My first note on my list of watching this game is Lukaku. You know, not ready. And Pulisic was out. Just in terms of lineup, it was Kai Havertz played up front with Mason Mount and Hakim Ziyech, those two little number 10s behind him. Just on that team, Rob, first of all, Lukaku, he's been on the bench now for two or three games.
I mean, whether he's been nursed back from the injury, Rob, we don't know, you know, the extent of the injury. Is he 100% fit? I've got to be honest, I said that was my first question working with Tim about this weekend. I went, Lukaku is like, scratch my head, like, got to get him in soon. You've got to get him back. And my point before the ball was kicked was, if Chelsea are going to win this title, I know one of the reasons you were a little bit more favouring them than the other two, and we know it's going to be a close race, but you've talked about what he brings. And I was saying to Tim, well, they've got to get Lukaku 15 to 20 goals, and they've got to get him back playing and a bit of stability back to that front line, because what we've seen at the moment is lots of different interchange through sometimes form, through fitness, through injuries, through who's available. But I just feel like maybe it needs to bed down a little bit at the moment. And when Lukaku was the front guy and he had the two under him, maybe Mount and Havertz at the start of the season, it looked decent. Then Lukaku's got injured and he hasn't scored, I think it's six games, Premier League games, without a goal, obviously since the injury. I just feel like they've got to get him back and in the team, Rob. From my point of view, it feels a bit, it would worry me a little bit if I'm a Chelsea fan, why I'm not starting to see him and why that's not starting to bed down. Because my question back to you, Rob, is I still don't think we know who Chelsea's best front three are.
We don't. And I don't think the manager does. And you know, again, I think we've seen various other nines. Kai Havertz played in this game. We've seen Timo Werner that still hasn't convinced that he's legitimate number nine. There's only one number nine at football club, and it's Romelu Lukaku.
Yeah.
And the other spots, I think it's a little easier to rotate those. But when your number nine changes a little bit, I don't know, I just think it's a little harder. Kai Havertz, Rob, just on him a little bit. And I'm really interested on your take on this as well. Yeah. Timo Werner and Kai Havertz came in from the Bundesliga last year for big monies, big fees. And I think a lot of people in football thought this really makes sense. Two strong players, great records. They've got good age. Coming to the football club. And at the beginning, we were said, you know, these guys are going to take a little bit of time to settle into the side. Because, you know, and this is sometimes when you see a player first come into the Premier League, you can kind of set your opinion pretty quickly. I think you know, Rob, when a player looks like he's got a ton more to give. And I think that was the case, particularly with Kai Havertz. Have you been disappointed with Havertz, Rob, in terms of the time taken, the effect in this league as a nine, as a 10, whatever he's played, he hasn't quite taken off?
Yeah, I think you're right. mitigating circumstances for him, I suppose. Moving to a foreign country, pandemic. I'm just putting the stuff out there, Rob. His age. I know he's an international one, but I'm putting things that can affect what we see on a football pitch in some of those things. I think he's been blessed, actually. Werner's took the rap for a lot of things because the spotlight hadn't been on him at all. I think that's helped him. And I think to a certain degree, and I am taking your points because I'm not here either to defend or not. I'm here to give my opinion that I think there's a player in there. But again, I'm not sure. I think he'd be better playing in more of a set position. Not that they can't rotate because football's about fluidity now. But knowing his role a little bit better and understanding his role. Because to a certain degree, Rob, I mentioned to Tim that there's almost a situation where Frank Lampard lost his job, not solely, but in part because he wasn't getting enough from these two. They were seen as big European signings who were ready to go to the next level, were ready to work out, and neither really has shown us a consistent run of form that we're starting to say, yeah, that's the player that Chelsea bought, that's the potential that Chelsea bought. So I hear your questions, and I think you're right. I believe there's some mitigating circumstances that at the moment give Havertz a little bit of an out, but we're starting to get to the point where, come on then, Kai, we've got to start seeing it now.
I think, obviously, the Tuchel coaching method has been great for the club in terms of its build-up play, its defensive strength, but you can't say that this German coach has made a big difference to those players that came out of the Bundesliga. And you could also say Christian Pulisic as well has worked with his coach before at Borussia Dortmund. Yeah. You know, I think we expected that. You know, he's going to get the best out of Timo Werner and Kai Havertz. And listen, it's just an observation that happens over a period of time where like, well, when are we going to see what these guys have done in previous leagues and for different teams, national teams as well. So I just, and it's not a chance because they lost, I guess naturally we'll try and pick up on things that weren't great. I just wanted to have a little chat about Havertz because I think we both agree he's super talented, but has he got the heart and the mental toughness and the strength, Rob, to force himself on games and to be a little bit more selfish and a little bit more, I don't know, a bit more of a swagger, Rob, a little bit more confidence. He's not that sort of guy, maybe he's not. Yeah. I just think he needs something to really persuade that. I mean, there's bits in games, even in this game, where he's silky, he's got lovely touch, he's got great size, he's got good speed. I'm waiting for him to put it all together. That's what I'm basically saying. And have a run where he scores goals, and he looks $1 million, which he hasn't.
Most of his argument, if somebody was arguing that he has scored the Champions League goal at one of the Champions Leagues. He's a big game player and he can come in big moments. But you're exactly right. We've got to see a little bit more for that kind of money, for that potential. You know, we're hoping that Tuchel can start to show us that. But you're right. I'm talking the other end, Rob. You mentioned it. Edouard Mendy.
Yeah.
Just an off day. We've got to rip that one up and say off day and move on. Because if that's Kepa, by the way, everybody's piling in.
All right. So here's my take on it. First one, and I went out last night with a few friends and we talked about the Edouard Mendy when he's got the ball. He does well initially to shield the player.
Yeah.
Who was it? It was Joe Bowen, wasn't it?
Joe Bowen, yeah.
And I said to these guys last night over a couple of beers, you forget how quick footballers are. Footballers, outfield players, strikers, they are lightning quick. So when Edouard Mendy thinks he can take a touch out of his feet and then clear the ball, well, that touch, if it's 3 yards away from his feet, he ain't getting there for the second touch. And that's what happened, Rob.
Yeah.
And you don't see that until you see a stark example of a goalkeeper and a big goalkeeper that's not an outfield player. He's not a runner or a quick or anything. And he thought he had time to take a touch and play the ball out. And he didn't. Error, mistake, obvious. Jorginho before that, of course, as well.
Yeah.
But that's an obvious error. Now, the second goal, and the winning goal from Arthur Masuaku, I didn't think was his fault. And I know that you and Tim in the studio put him to blame for that. I thought it was more freakish than an obvious error. I think from that position, he's got every... I understand his weight's going to be going left because Masuaku is trying to cross the ball. And I don't think goalkeepers are going to stand that much closer to that near post, Rob, when the ball's probably going to come into the back post. So I thought he tried to get back after he saw the weird like knuckle of the ball, where there's a slight deflection or whatever it was, a weird, totally weird shot. I personally, don't think it's an awful error for Mendy. Yes, of course, he'll be frustrated with himself and think he can save it on another occasion. I don't think it was a bad error.
No, I disagree. And I think if it was Kepa, I think we'd be jumping on him. I think you only had to look at his face and he knew that he'd messed up. Yes, he takes a position, but I still think he had enough time to get back. I thought he had a bad day. And a bad day for one goalkeeper sometimes is okay. Can we move on? Yes. If it starts to become more regular, that becomes an issue then that Tuchel would have to address because obviously with Kepa in the team and the defensive base of Adam, I mean, they've conceded 6 goals in all 14 games before. They conceded 3 here at West Ham. And I think we need to talk about West Ham, Rob, because it wasn't just about Chelsea's defeat. It was more about a West Ham win. And David Moyes and this team and this group of players who continue to defy the odds at times. I said to Rebecca before kickoff, and she said about, you know, how you what you feel about the game. And I said, as I said against Liverpool recently against West Ham, I wouldn't be surprised if West Ham win the game, Rob, because that's what David Moyes has got about this group. They stay in games when they need to. They've got a little bit of fight about them. They've got a threat from set pieces. They've got willing workers. They've got ability in the team. And one of the things I said to Rebecca that was really interesting as I was watching the end of the game is the London Stadium's getting a bit of a personality and a soul about it. That I used to feel it used to almost hinder the team. And it was like, you know, we're too far away. We can't get a connection. That's starting to change. And I know that's winning. And I know that, but it feels like a different place now. And I think that's important for West Ham to have that. As we know back in the day, at Upton Park. You used to go to Upton Park and you knew what you were getting in terms of the game and the crowd.
Yeah, I agree. I think when you get that, is it nearly 60,000 there, Rob, isn't it? Or it can get to that. When West Ham are playing well and winning and where they are on the league table, everyone's going to come want to watch West Ham United. The atmosphere with that amount of people is going to be great. So, yeah, those days are forgotten when the team's not playing well. Maybe there's a few empty spots in the stadium. Mm. The football's not great. There's a bit of moaning, groaning. Then they sort of looking around and they see how far away it is. So I think it does come back to, it's not a great football stadium. That still holds true. But when the team is playing as well as it is and showing the guts and the fight and the technical football at times as well, with a little fluky winning goal today, they will take it and they deserve it. As we both know, Rob, we've played against West Ham many, many times. Mm. And I got to say, that totally up or down that team. And I've been at Upton Park many times where the fans are booing the their team off the field and it feels really good to play there. Other times where it's a nightmare place to go. So really good for them, really good for David Moyes. Again, a team that fights and scraps and stays in games. Just Jared Bowen, I think, was due a few goals, Rob. So I think he's, if you look at the other players, you know,
Finals and Tony had all got goals. He was a little bit low on the numbers,
Yeah, so he's coming good now, and I mean, it's remarkable where they are on the league table. It really is, given the opponents and how strong the big boys are this season. So West Ham continue to do it. Another gutsy, scrappy, fighty, and you earn that little bit of luck, Rob, you know, and they're on the front foot. They were advanced. You know, he came into the game and the cross from the left side there was a bit of a weird one. And they won the game. It's kind of remarkable because Chelsea were in control. And my first bunch of notes are like, you know, this Chelsea system is so controlling and it's so solid. But the second half it went a little bit. So very unlike Chelsea, a little bit of a, you know, reality check, but a bit of a, like, you know, we got a lot of work to do because there's some teams that we'll talk about, Rob, that are playing pretty good football and Chelsea can't, you know. I said, again, just thinking last night what was going through my mind is, and it's very early yet, and Chelsea can recover and win the title. Mm. I just don't know whether Chelsea aren't quite ready yet, Rob, aren't quite ready to win the title. They're still figuring things out where it feels like City and Liverpool are super grooved and it just matters who's fit and available and they're going to do their thing. Or Chelsea's still trying to improve. They're trying to, I don't know. We'll see.
When they're good, they look good and they look like they control the opposition probably as well as any of the top three. But on their off days, it gets a bit loose. So, we'll see. Plenty of football more to play. Let's move it on to Liverpool next because they went away to Wolverhampton Wanderers. Not an easy place to go. Wolves 0, Liverpool 1. Late Divock Origi goal. Again, Origi comes up with a big moment for Liverpool. As I was watching this game, I was thinking, Rob, is this one of those where Liverpool just can't quite get it done? Is this the day like we've seen maybe last? It's more like last season where, you know, they had possession, they created chances, but they didn't find the goal. And then, for me, the Origi goal, the manner that it came, the manner that it was scored, the manner that it was celebrated, took me back to the title-winning season. Took me straight back to the title winning season. That's what they did. I remember them doing it at Villa. I remember them doing it at Sheffield United. I remember them three or four places going late on and finding a winner. And it starts to feel a bit more like that now with Liverpool.
Yeah, you stole my thunder, mate. I mean, my big words over this game is the celebration. Mm. And, you know, from I know Chelsea lost, but from Chelsea still trying to find the best Chelsea there is under Thomas Tuchel, Liverpool know what theirs is, their best form of themselves is, and maybe it wasn't the best form of themselves against Watford, but when that goal went in and the celebration, Jordan Henderson was there, Rob was there, the manager was there, all the staff were there flying at the side of the pitch. I'm like, wow, this is what it means right now to this team. And God, the emotion and the drive and it just, you know, the desire, it looks like, to win another title, Rob, is strong. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting you picked up the same thing because, mm-hmm. you know, it isn't, you know, we both want to talk about that because we feel it means something. We're not just saying it because it looked pretty cool on the sideline. Mm-hmm. Cough, that was a you know, quite a few players and staff that knew what that meant.
Yeah.
Knows where they're trying to get. And, and again, from a player that... And I'll announce my this weekend's underappreciated performer, Divock Origi. I mean, how many times has this been now?
You've had a week. You've had Fred and Divock Origi in the same week, my friend.
Well, I mean, it could have been Fred again, but we'll talk about Fred. But no, I mean, underappreciated, Rob, because we all know what it's like to be in a team when there are a lot of strikers and they don't play. It's a miserable place for forwards and for strikers. And he's been hearing it forever and ever and ever about the front three at Liverpool. And Diogo Jota comes into the team and the squad and starts scoring goals. Again, he's the one that's custard pied and he's put onto the bench, but comes in important moments and scores unbelievable goals in big games. So he did it again today. It's going to be really important for some point for him to come and play. Maybe the African Cup of Nations, Rob, when they're going to lose Mo Salah and Sadio Mane. You might see Divock Origi a little more with maybe Jota in that lineup. Maybe Firmino at that point as well. So, yeah, well done, Origi. Underappreciated for what he does at this football club as a teammate, but also an important striker when he gets those few minutes in not many games to come and do his thing.
Yeah, and you touched on something, Rob, I just wanted to go to, because the African Cup of Nations is something that has to come under serious consideration for Liverpool. They lose Mo Salah, who has a brilliant assist, 13 goals, 9 assists now. I mean, it's incredible numbers. I mean, he's touched for the Origi goal and the setup. They lose Sadio Mane. I believe there's a possibility of possibly the Chelsea game. I think that's early January 2nd that probably the players will play. Then I think it's Crystal Palace and Brentford. There's a FA Cup game and possibly Leicester. So that's kind of a rough guide of about the month that they could be away.
Hmm.
Is there a worry for Liverpool losing those two players that City will talk about, particularly, could create a 6 or 7 point gap during that time?
Yes,
because you've got no Salah, got no money. So let's say Origi having moments like he had yesterday are important. He's going to come in. You'd like, I think Firmino comes back and Jota plays, so it's not a bad three. You've got Ox who could play up there. You've got maybe others. Minamino who can come and do you a job. Is there enough for Liverpool to sustain what they're doing, or are they sort of need to get a few more points in the bag now because of what might come?
Yeah, I would be worried if I was a Liverpool fan. And I know it can vary the time away, and there's some controversy, Rob, about when they were to meet up.
Yeah,
and what that would.
Yeah,
there's something that I remember reading.
That's the Chelsea game. They want them to meet up like a couple of weeks before the tournament.
And yeah,
class with the game.
Right.
Also got to remember the African is where the other variants about, Rob. So we don't know what's going to happen about quarantine and isolation and players coming back and things. So it's just a really uneasy time for Liverpool when things just look to be going so well.
Yeah, and two players that are incredible form at the moment, particularly Mo Salah, but even Sadio Mane, Rob. He's miles better than he was last year with his numbers so far as well. So, yeah, that's a legitimate concern that Liverpool fans will have. But they're not playing well. You know, they're not playing well. And you know, defensively, a little bit less drama over the last couple of matches, really, for them with that. But, yeah, another very important win for them. 3 points keeps the pressure on everybody else at the top.
For the world's greatest athletes.
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again!
Goal for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics. This summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
Okay, my friend, we're going to move it on to Vicarage Road. Watford 1, Manchester City 3. Death by 1,000 passes. I mean, just it's ridiculous. I said to Bex, was asked this morning about the top three, and I said, they're redefining Premier League football as we've known. They're playing it in a different way, Bex. They're doing it in a different style, with a different manner, with a different possession, with a different shape than we've seen before. And maybe it'll go away when Pep goes. Maybe others will try it, but their consistency, their dominance, their probing of the opposition gets to such a point that the midfield player, Loser, which is not a good last name to have by any means, the midfield player, Rob, there was a shot of him during the first half where he was panting, looking around as if, like, where's the next one coming from? And I was not surprised. He came off at half-time. If you have a look, he came off. And I remember thinking to myself, I bet he's dizzy in that dressing room. Just dizzy by what was going on, Rob. It was interesting. They started Jack Grealish up at the top, central in the false nine, Foden to the left, Sterling to the right, Rodri held, and he had Gundogan and Bernardo Silva next to him. And they went on a merry dance, my friend.
Yeah, I think you're right when you say Pep's redefining football. We've never seen football like this before in the Premier League. I can say that safe in the knowledge. We've never seen so much possession quality and dominance from a team. And where it's different, where this has evolved over the last couple of seasons, this no striker situation, which was my concern, you were less concerned. Obviously, you went from to win the title. Yeah. I thought they'd just go a little bit short. He has adjusted the way the team plays to account for that. And there's so many players that arrive in the boxes of what he says. And you have to arrive in the box. There's so many players that do that, that they're banging the goals in from different people. That's where the redefining part comes in. Like, do even the teams need strikers anymore? Yeah. This modern day of silky football, possession football and pressing, does there need to be a big centre forward? Is he going to be that important, particularly the team that's really stuck on playing this possession football along the ground, the combinations, the movements. It's brilliant, brilliant to watch. Mm. The team, Rob. Now, a couple of things on the team. Rodri with Bernardo Silva and Gundogan.
Yeah.
Love it, actually. Yeah. Love it. And I know Kevin De Bruyne is not there right now. I wouldn't change if Kevin De Bruyne was fit.
Well, he came back. He came on, didn't he, for the last bits of the game? Yeah, he came on at the end because he's had COVID and he's just getting over the COVID, yeah.
So he doesn't get in that team for me right now. Now, and I'll explain why. Bernardo Silva.
I was going to say, I'm shaking my head, so please tell me why.
No, he doesn't. Well, obviously,
right. A fit Kevin De Bruyne doesn't get in your team.
No. Well, there's okay.
Explain.
Maybe one spot. But Rodri, obviously the holding player. Bernardo Silva is one of the first on the team sheet. Yeah, Two goals, brilliant performance. Ilkay Gundogan, Rob, would be the spot where potentially. But he's important for the goals that they need without a central striker. We know what he did last year, 13 Premier League goals. Hasn't quite been the same season for him, but it could be. I see he nearly scored in this the shot he went through.
Played
in behind. Mm. I like the midfield three, and I like the front three. I think Sterling's got more of a goal threat than Riyad Mahrez and Gabriel Jesus, though there's always going to be rotations there.
I
think Phil Foden... Enough said. Brilliant player. Yeah. Wherever he needs to be in the side, Jack Grealish as a number nine, Rob, is interesting to me, and it might be a good. He hasn't been amazing at it, and he had a good chance to score. No. Just his touch was a little heavy, but I don't mind it. And I wouldn't mind seeing a little bit more of it, more involved, more around the goal. Jack Grealish needs to get more goals, more, you know, he needs to threaten the goal more. And playing as in the central part might be a really good way of doing that. Foden's so brilliant, you can play him anywhere, but it might get more out of Grealish. The Foden's on the left and Grealish is through the middle. So when I look at the front six, the midfield three and the front three, no nine, but lots of scorers, Rob.
Yeah.
Lots of scorers. Every one of those players, apart from Rodri, could, I know Grealish hasn't yet, they could get double figures, you know, well into double figures, which could be enough to win a Premier League title. So I just thought this team, I liked it. And I think you saw that from the performance and the dominance was wow. They can play and they can create and score as well with these midfield and attacking players in the team.
Which is the reason, actually, without Harry Kane, still said, this team will get enough goals that you score in the six-yard box that Kane can get, but others can get. And then they can come up with special goals, as we've seen Bernardo's than one or two others do. And I'd agree with you. I thought, Jack, I got a little bit disappointed for Jack, the way the game was going. And I saw his face when he looked over and his number came up. And it was almost like he was just saying, please leave me on. Please let me get a goal. Because he's trying everything, and it's just not quite working. He had a shot that was blocked that went over the top. He had a touch was a little bit heavy, ran into the keeper, it got away from him. And he just can't quite find that Jack Grealish touch. And I was thinking to myself last night about it, because I knew we'd touch on it today. And I was thinking, he hasn't really had a Jack Grealish moment yet. One of them special moments where you go, wow, that, you know, I almost feel like that's what he needs for himself. And maybe just for the team and the fans and everybody just to buy into what he is. But I agree. I still think he's a great addition. I think he understands. He's understanding what Pep wants. And as I said, the way they play, the football they play, they'll continue to score goals. There is one man, my friend, who had to be my unappreciated player of this week. And I'm going to say something that I'm sure you're going to laugh out loud. He's the closest thing to David Silva I've seen playing in the Premier League, probably apart from Georgie King-Cladze, who was another Man City brilliant player. Bernardo Silva, my friend, is playing football at another level. And Bernardo, here's my line for Bernardo Silva that I hope we'll retain till the end of the season. Bernardo Silva is going to be this season's Ilkay Gundogan from last season. Bernardo Silva is now on 7 Premier League goals. That's more than half than what Gundogan got in the title winning season last year, 13 goals, top scorer. Gundogan probably at 15, 16, the way he's going, if he can continue to play. And others, as you say, around him. His football, Rob, his intelligence, his reading. There was a couple of times yesterday where I was saying to Bex, look what he's doing. He's having the ball here to create a space for somebody else. He knows where the space is, but he's drawing his defenders. He doesn't want the ball. But look what he's... And he does so many of those unselfish things that unless you could stop the camera and show people, it's so hard to define. He's just... He gets everything that Pep's trying to do in a way, in that silky left foot. And the goal that he scores, I mean, he just drifts outside Rose as if to say, well, you've got to come with me because you can't let me go past you. Knowing he's going to go back onto his left foot, which is where he wants to be strong foot, and just bends it with his left foot into the goal. I mean... That is just top-end superb football. And right now, I mean, there was some talk at the beginning of the season that Bernardo Silva might be allowed to leave the football club. I mean, you couldn't pay enough to get him out of that football club now for Pep.
No, I think underappreciated is a good shout, and he shouldn't be anymore. He shouldn't be. He is a brilliant little player. I'm sure that I and we have talked about him, Rob, before about how brilliant he is.
Yeah.
You know, again, another name I'll throw at you, even a bigger name than David Silva, Andres Iniesta. The ability to keep possession of the ball is so underestimated. It is so important, particularly in a Pep team. You give him the ball with three or four players around, he'll wiggle. He knows where people are. His vision's really good. He'll play little one-twos to get out of trouble. He's just got an incredible football intelligence, football IQ in tactical situations, as well as his technical, you know, brilliance. He's a slight little guy. He's got no physicality. I think mentally he's pretty tough, actually. I think he's got a big heart the way that he plays. So it's a very good shout, a player that I love to pieces. And there's been periods, isn't there, where he's looked great and then he went quiet again. Pep didn't play him and now he's obviously on fire. So good shout. City cruising, looking great at the moment. I don't think there's a team that makes winning look as easy as they do, Rob. And I'm going back for years. Like, it almost looks boring because it's like, here we go. And Pep said it well afterwards, Rob. I saw his quote afterwards where he's saying, saying that they're an incredibly consistent team. And that's of course, credit to himself to be that grooved. But they are. Every time you see him play, it's the same. It's the same pattern. It's the same kind of pattern. Slightly different issues that they'll attack in different ways, but they usually win. So good result. Really, really great performance again from them.
Let's talk about the other Manchester team then. There was a big spotlight on Manchester United at Old Trafford this weekend at home to Crystal Palace. Palace, a team that beat them on the last two occasions to Old Trafford. Ralph Rangnick's first game in charge. No, you were watching this one. Give us your school report on Mr. Rangnick's first day in at Old Trafford, my friend.
Well, I for me, very good. I mean, obviously better. Obviously well organised, obviously working on the press. You can see it in the first three minutes of the game, Rob, where they're trying to press, they're trying to keep people in. The system is different. Thought it worked pretty well with the outside players. It's like basically like a 4-4-2, but the outside players kind of come in a little bit and try and give problems to the opponents in between those lines a little bit, and the fullbacks can use that space. It wasn't a massive difference. The biggest difference was their work ethic, their desire to press, not just from the front, and not just in midfield, but defenders as well, which is what they have absolutely lacked. So when the ball goes a little longer, instead of teams getting hold of the ball and be able to come out, Maguire was higher. Yeah. You know, all the fullback, everybody was higher to win the ball back, which is what you want to see. And I guess most importantly, Rob, the game pattern, the flow of it, was pretty consistent through the 90 minutes. And we have never seen that with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Mm. We've never seen that. There's always good moments and bad moments, and going forward, then we're going back. There was a control in the game that we haven't seen. Rangnick said about it afterwards that he thought that it was is really important to see how his team were, and in his phrase, his words he's going to use, against the ball. That's his kind of phrase. Yeah, you know, against the ball, he was really, really pleased. Yeah. And I just saw a team that was controlled, that was on the front foot, and benefited from the territory of that. So when you're pressing high and everybody's high, well then the whole team is high and you can win back, you can attack from there. You're not running the full length of the blimmin' pitch to attack and then defend again. So lots of good signs. Of course, we know it's early. Of course, we know he's had, like, I think, a day or one session with them. But the composed nature, the lack of drama defensively, and David De Gea to have actually a quiet game. Mm. I bet the defenders are thinking,
This is
it's not all about us. Yeah, it's not. Yeah. We're the ones that get hammered because they get exposed on turnovers and lack of protection. So I thought it was miles better. But we've been around this long enough to know that there's always going to be a little bit of a manager boost and a little manager bump. But let's be honest, it was pretty obvious how it was different coached, different attitude, different tactically, and much, much better even in his first game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, control was my first word. I just thought it was more control than I've seen United for so long. Less drama. They were more compact. You were right. We didn't have time on air. We'd done a couple of shots early on where there was the pressing. A couple where Lindelof and Maguire were going in on that first touch of Benteke and keeping the game in and making it difficult for Palace to come out. They had a little spell at the end of the first half where Palace had a little bit of action in second half, which you'd expect. And it's going to be an revolving kind of evolving situation with Rangnick, but I thought lots of good things to start with for United, and obviously he's going to start finding his players. And I was just interested in both fullbacks, Rob, because Dolo and Telles, two who I haven't really seen that much off. A bit of Telles in and out when Shaw's not been available. Dolo not so much when Wan-Bissaka's playing. But I was sort of saying to Tim as well, there's always that opportunity for these kind of players under Rangnick is playing well and you've got the shirt. The manager doesn't particularly have to go, well, Wan-Bissaka was signed for X amount of dollars and that's, you know, I'm going to put him in. If you're doing a good job and the team are playing well, I just thought there's one or two opportunities for you, Plo. It's to kind of maybe change the landscape a little bit and at least give more competition for places.
Yeah, why not? I mean, it's the time to do it, isn't it? I mean, we've been at clubs where we've had new managers so many times and you absolutely feel like, Yeah, I hope he's his type of player, and you'll try a little harder or whatever, maybe in training and games, and to hope to try and get on his good side. The two fullbacks I thought were excellent, Rob, yeah. Excellent. And there's more onus now on the fullbacks if he's going to continue to play in this narrow way. And I don't think it'll always do that, but obviously it's something he's done in game one. Luke Shaw, great for the left side because he's really good going forward. Wan-Bissaka, less so.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a little bit of room to manoeuvre in the whole squad, I thought. And he made subs. Rashford's, you know, hasn't quite been Sancho himself. Rashford. I don't think so. He came off later on in the game. And Ronaldo, I know the manager was pleased the way that he pressed. And,
yeah.
You know, it's almost like forget all the noise about Ronaldo's not a big pressing player. You know, a good coach, Grob, can motivate and can direct anybody. And Ronaldo's been in teams that won a loads of stuff. And, you know, he's always been the same guy. He's not, you know, I think that was overblown a little bit. But it's good. And I thought the fans were into it, Rob. I thought the fans were great as well at Old Trafford. They were cheering every tackle, every press, as if they knew what they wanted to see as well. And they hadn't been seen under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And frustration on the back of that. I've said it so many times that the better you are without the ball directly affects how you are with it. It just does, because you're winning balls in good spots. There's spaces. You're on the front foot. You haven't got a rut. You're going to be fresher when you. So it should be. And if I ever got more into my coaching, it's the first thing that I'd want to do is get my team really good without the ball, because it does more than half of the work with your attacking side of it, if you can win the ball back regularly. So, I thought it was in those fullbacks. I thought Fred, you know, I know we joke about Fred.
Yeah.
Fred is probably going to enjoy this.
Mm.
And Ralf Rangnick knows the importance of hard-working central midfield players. And we've criticised the middle of midfield. And I still don't think I know McTominay and Fred do a good job in this pressing side of things. I still think they could do with an upgrade in there.
Mm.
But Fred started off great.
Yeah.
And Fred, I feel Fred a little bit because, you know, he isn't the most technically gifted midfield player you're going to see in the Premier League, but he's got a tremendous energy, he's got a tremendous heart, and he wants to please. And I think he probably is the most coachable player in the squad. You want me to do that? Okay, yeah, I can do that. I think he'll listen to instruction great from Ralf Rangnick, and I think he'll be a really important part of that press and being infectious the way that he works hard to close the ball down. So Fred, I thought McTominay was disappointing, actually.
Yeah, not
just,
quite.
Just
not
randomly.
Quite, not quite himself, was
no,
it?
No, not quite himself.
Yeah. You wonder if Fred, it's interesting you say that, because as you were talking, and obviously Fred gets the goal, but he's nicking balls now, he's a bit higher up the pitch, he's looking like he's enjoying it a little bit more than maybe we've seen him in the past. But it made me think, like, I wonder if Fred's going to turn out to be a bit like Højbjerg or one of those players who you never really had a great opinion of, and all of a sudden you see him in a setup that works him better and you start thinking, oh, he's not bad actually, he's more important than I thought, and it's who plays with him is the balance.
But you're right, Rob, because if somebody's more talented alongside him than McTominay, then you're okay with Fred being a bit more basic. So I think it goes into your point, like he's a really good player and United require really good players, but I think it will need some stars around him for him to. One just thing popped into my mind. I did see a quote actually online. Ralf Rangnick said after the game is that he didn't like, there was two passes apparently. There's two passes, I think, from Fred and McTominay that were sideways passes.
Right.
That we're gonna work on that. So,
I think that forward, didn't he?
I think every when, particularly when they win the ball back, you've got to go forward, you've got to try and score a goal in this. 8 seconds or whatever he wants. So, without going over the board, mate, I just thought it was, I thought it was a big improvement. I could absolutely see a better, compact, well-organised, better coach team play.
Yeah, good start for Rangnick. And I would say as well, if you look at the fixtures coming up next, six or seven games are all kind of winnable. You know, and I know that's not going to be easy, but all of a sudden they could have a run going into Christmas and into the new year, and then things start to certainly pick up for United.
For the world's greatest athletes,
this is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again!
Goal for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this!
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics, Friday, July 26th on NBC and Peacock.
Let's move on to another team who I think we called on the podcast and this week, Sneaky Spurs, are doing sneaky well at the moment, my friend. Sneaky Antonio Conte has got them going. He's keeping clean sheets now. He's getting them scoring goals, apart from the Prince. And things going, I think, as well as he could have liked. Is it 10 points out of 12 now in charge?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I think we did say that there would be pretty quick improvement. We know that the squad isn't brilliant and it's going to take a little bit of time to really get where he wants them to be. And there's still going to be some hiccups along the way. But I think what he wanted, and I think we're starting to see, is a better, stronger foundation defensively, less up and down, in it, which is what he said in his words, you know, like it's a little bit more consistency. I'm sure the patterns of play are starting to, we talked about the patterns of play, the shadow play that he does for hours and hours and hours. I'm sure that's starting to reap rewards from that a little bit. Heung-min Son's, you know, he's a coach's dream. He's a coach's dream. A little bit like Fred, I'm sure he will listen to every word that the coach asks him and wants him to do. So he's got great energy. He's got great quality. He scores goals. Antonio Conte will love Heung-min Son. Mm. Of course, the big conversation piece is Harry Kane and what's going on with him at the moment and why he's not scoring and looks off.
He's had a couple of chances, hasn't he? And he's looked a little bit off, and I saw he didn't get played in once, I think, by Lucas today. He was a little unhappy that the ball wasn't coming. Just, you know, snatching at one or two things. The one that he clips over the goalkeeper, over Krul.
Yeah, when you think he'd score that easy.
Yeah, that's his kind of goals. Mm. They've been his go-tos. I don't know, do you get a bit tight in those situations? Are you snatching a little bit? One goal and one assist against Newcastle early in the season. It's not great. It's not a great return for him. And, Spurs are going to need him to start scoring goals if they're going to, you know, continue to go well and at least challenge that fourth spot, if not higher.
We've seen this before from him, Rob. Obviously not this long a period of time. It's usually in August, isn't it, where he doesn't score any goals in August. And, maybe you can delay that because of all the trouble that he had in the transfer window and a poor start and the manager situation and all that. So I would tend to think that he is going to start scoring soon, Rob. He's such a good finisher.
Yeah.
You know, I know it's not flowing right now, but at least his attitude is on. He looks like he's interested again. Looks like he wants to play for the new manager. And it's been taking a bit of time. But, you know, I think he's going to be excited for the project, if you like, with this new guy, and particularly when they start winning. So I think it will come. I really do think it will come. And he'll, you know, he's going to get into double figures and have a good second half of the season. But you're right. They need that if he's going to finish in the top four. I mean, and Spurs finish in the top four, if they do that ahead of the likes of Arsenal and Manchester United, West Ham United would be...
Fifth at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, that would be pretty successful, very successful for Conte if he can do that this season with them.
25 points with the game in hand, that game in hand against Burnley. So they go above West Ham and fourth if they won those points. So, good start from Conte. I suppose we've got to wait and see when either a slip comes or things don't go so well, how we can readdress that. Tim Howard was saying this time, well, you know what these Spurs players are like. Eventually, they'll revert to type. It's going to be interesting if he can keep them on it, Rob, and keep those clean sheets. And, you know, that's what he's done, hasn't he, in the past. And his procedures and his ways have generally helped his teams out.
But I don't think that we're going to see Spurs capitulate and be a shambles defensively. Like Tim's talking, like they're going to go back to what they... Yeah. I would be really surprised if we saw that for any more than maybe one off game or something. Yeah. But that's the whole point of Conte, that he's going to try and build a much more of a steady foundation base. I agree with Tim in a lot of ways that defenders are not really good enough for where he wants to take them. Mm. But with his coaching and organisation and planning, they can. I'd be surprised if they go back to that really kind of weak and leaky Spurs. I don't think we're going to see it this year.
No, me neither. Conte getting the job done at Spurs. Sneaky Spurs. We'll keep a sneaky eye on them, see how they're going. So I'll take it to Villa Park. Aston Villa 2, Leicester 1. I really enjoyed this game. Obviously, Stevie G coaching against Brendan Rodgers, used to be his captain at Liverpool, managed against him in the Rangers and Celtic up in Scotland. And Stevie G gets one over his former boss with another good win for Aston Villa. Villa Park jumping at the end, Villa till I die. And Stevie G, not sneakily doing well, started his career very well. Three wins out of four for Aston Villa and has got them going.
Yeah, I think it's pretty obvious that the Villa fans are right to be excited. Not just with the football, but what he says, which is important, what he says before and after games and how he carries himself in the games. I think we've seen plenty of passion from him and kicking every ball, as you said, after the game today, Rob, in his post-match press conference. Yeah. But he can affect a game. And second half, they were a lot better than they were in the first half. And I think he was right, like giving the ball away too many times. If you give the ball away, whoever you are, you're going to be in bad spots. You're going to get caught out a little bit. So I think it's impressive what he's doing right now. Again, the team's super narrow with the way that they play, like this Christmas tree, really, 4-3-2-1, and getting narrow as they get forward. Good options in the attacking sense. And I think the players were saying afterwards, I read some quotes that, you know, it's just giving everybody a boost. They had a bad run, 5 losses. Yeah. They were, you know, and sometimes you need that. What I would say, Rob, is that it's still a difficult job and club to satisfy longer term. What I mean by that is that there's so much excitement around. I know they spent a lot of money and the club are bouncing right now, and they're bouncing also with their new manager, Steven Gerrard. It's going to be hard to keep that winning consistency, in my opinion. I think it will. Yeah. I don't think the team is that good to win, four or five,
then that they're possibly, and this isn't a slur, I'm just asking, do you think they're thinking above their station to a certain degree, like we should be challenging top six? Because I don't think it's quite there yet. I think for a team that has just come up, I think there's a sense that we should be, could we be 10 to 6? Can we be somewhere between 10 and 6, I think, is the target for Gerrard and the expectancy of fans right now.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that, Rob. And that's a sensible, good target. Yeah. Now, could I see them nicking 6th? Yeah. If they can continue this. And Gerrard's interesting afterwards again, Rob, where there's some things that we weren't happy with, and players still don't trust our methods yet. If like we're trying to do different things that they still aren't taking on board. That.
Yeah.
And he said, absolutely, we'll work on that this week, ready for the next game, going to Anfield, of course, Liverpool next weekend. I like that, because he realises there's some spots that isn't quite right. Yeah. He understands that. He isn't afraid to say that. And he'll work on things. So that's encouraging. Mm. I just fear, right? I'll throw it back to you on this one. After all that being said, how really good he started, are we seeing a classic manager bump, a honeymoon period, and it could kind of drop off, and they could go back to a bit inconsistent Villa? Not the same as under Dean Smith, because that's not doing Steven Gerrard enough credit. Yeah. But this winning, I mean, they lose to Man City, but other than that, like, great victories, or do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
is this a classic manager bump that could drop off a little bit?
I think not, and I think not for a couple of reasons. Why it could be a manager bump is because I think that it's Steven Gerrard, he's, you know, the great player, the great Premier League legend, and all that. But to be honest, there's so little of that about Steven Gerrard, the manager. That impresses me more every time I see him. He doesn't care about his ex-career. I bet he's not one of those players, managers, whoever says, when we played here, when I was playing. You've just talked about it, Rob. The same thing that I listened to after the game, when he started to say, I saw the things we didn't do right. He talked about small detail. He talks about things. I never heard Frank Lampard, when he was at Chelsea, talk about those same things. We often said, Frank's in-game management needs a little brush up. Frank isn't seeing those things. I don't think Stevie's missing too much. Now, I also think he's backroom staff around him. Michael Beale is a guy you'll see him with MB next to him. And there's Gary McCarthy. And there's one other guy who's part of his staff, of his brains trust as well. He's got good people around him, Rob, who are all playing their part and having their say and doing their thing. And I just think that this guy, I think he's a real deal, mate. And I think because of that, I don't think it's about a bump, or I don't think he's going to allow standards. I mean, it was young Ramsey who said today, you know, standards have gone up in training. Those things don't happen just because those things happen.
But they've got to stay up, Rob, haven't they? They've got to stay up in training. Yeah.
Exactly. Because that's his job to do that. I think he will stay up, because I don't think Steven Gerrard's going to allow. Steven Gerrard, the thing that made Steven Gerrard great wasn't just that he was technically very, very good. He had the energy and the drive that we had, that we didn't have his ability, so we had to have energy and drive. He had both, Rob. And I think as a manager, he's not going to allow people to not put the hard work in.
Well, that's such an important part of it. Motivation from a manager is so important. So if you're right, then yeah, that can make a permanent difference. But we'll see whether those players are able to take that instruction, the drive from the manager, and keep doing it every week. It would be really important to how they go.
It's a good point as well. Just before we move on, because we'll jump to Leeds next. But that motivation and that drive that we're talking about, has Brendan Rodgers still got a hold of that at Leicester? Exceeded 13 goals from set pieces now. There's a little bit of, there's something, a bit of sparks missing from Leicester City for me, Rob. And then they played, this play spells a good football, and you can see that they're well coached, but something doesn't quite smell right, as Brendan would say, around them. Is he going to be able to keep pushing and prodding these players and getting the best out of them, or is it maybe going to start to go the other way?
It's so hard, isn't it? It's so hard. Yeah. Like, if you can imagine being in his shoes, like, he's brought so much excitement and the football was great and everybody realises, and Stephen Gerrard's had some really nice words about him, what he's like on the training ground.
Yeah.
But to keep that excitement and sparkle, if you like, keep the sparkle in the eyes of the players for a longer period of time, it must be difficult. And I think we've talked about this before, where does there get to a point where he seems to plateau a little bit and the message gets lost a little bit? He's got to show us that we're wrong, Rob. I mean, he's got to show us that he can go again with this Leicester team, because they are talented. They are a really good side. Harvey Barnes starting to look a lot better again. Mm. Confidence was really down over the last few months, really. I obviously had that injury as well earlier on, but I thought he was bright. Lovely goal with a little side foot into the corner. So he's got to show us, Rob. He's got to show us. And we've, I think you said today on the broadcast today, we've given a lot of praise to Brendan Rodgers when he deserved it, and the team plays great football, and it comes into a team and organises, and some of the football and the younger player development is great. But don't let everybody down now then. Yeah. It's a bad run, and everybody's allowed to have a bad dip or a bad run, unless you have 7 or 8, and then you're probably going to get fired, as we've seen other teams. So I'm just waiting. This is just it's just information gathering of Brendan Rodgers. Mm. How good is he? Because he's got to get this team going again, because they're better. They are definitely better with the squad than where the table suggests right now. Mm. So that's when the pressure does start to come on the manager, and he'll be given time, I think, to turn it around. And let's see if he can do that, because it's going to be important for his career, Rob.
Yeah.
If this drops away at Leicester and he goes the next 5 or 6 with maybe one win, then there is a lot of pressure. And then, like, ooh, where's his next job? That's how crazy this game is with manager, with results. You can be up and down very quickly.
The same guy that, if things were going well, might well have been Manchester United manager right now. Yeah, you're right. Listen, let's go to a game that ended 2-2. Two teams, Rob, who, I was thinking about this a couple of years ago, were both playing in the Championship. We now got a 2-2 draw in the Premier League against Leeds and Brentford. Really good game. Leeds get ahead through Roberts, and then Brentford come back through Baptiste and Kanyos with a lovely finish. And then our friend Patrick Bamford comes back on the scene, first game back since mid-September, gets the equaliser, all kinds of stuff going on the pitch, a bit of stuff going off it. Did you see much of this one? Did you take a look?
I saw the bits, I saw the highlights, I saw the main bits, and great celebrations again, wasn't it? I mean, you come on that late and you score, and to be fair, good celebration. The old shirt was getting tossed around and chucked over his head, and that Rafinha penalty against Crystal Palace in the last game to get them the 3 points at Elland Road was so important. And it does feel great when you get a late goal, but I'm thinking, well, they're gonna win this game, they're gonna, they're cruising in this game. And then Brentford, to be fair to them, came back really, really strongly.
Yeah,
but I think Bamford coming back is obviously what they've really missed and what they've really needed. Not just the goals, his general play, the familiar nature with everybody around him. Dan James will have to get used to playing with him, I guess, as being a new player. But I expect more now from Jack Harrison and some of the midfield players that haven't been as good. So it's huge getting him back. And I enjoyed the goal and celebration. Elland Road. Elland Road's a crazy. I have a very, very sad memory there of relegation, actually, at Elland Road. But what a blimmin'. I appreciate what it is there. And when them fans get going, I just think, like, they need to redevelop the ground. They need to get a little bit bigger, don't they?
I
think football, they've had tough times over the last decade or so, but they got the fans to
fill out. Absolutely, no problem. And don't forget, Luke Ayling was back as well today, Rob. I think he's important for him at the back.
Good shout.
Full back, right back, useful about. I think he's a good influence around that club. Yeah. Well, some video going around on social media. I think it's Victor Orta, the director of football at Leeds. We've got caught on some altercations shouting. We're not quite sure who at, whether it's somebody from Brentford connections or Leeds connection, will get very animated at the side and have to be calmed down. It's not, I didn't think it was a particularly good look for Leeds.
It's not a good look.
But for somebody who's in an experienced management role in the football club, just thought that doesn't give a good global look. You know, that's going out all over the US. And Leeds have been such a breath of fresh air and so welcome to the Premier League. I just thought that shouldn't really be happening. That shouldn't be going out all over social media as it was.
No, shouldn't. Maybe some of the Leeds fans will like that. You know, fired up director of football, but he's a director of this
responsibility of
great football club. Yeah, and whatever's said, and my goodness, I mean, he should know. I mean, there's all sorts of horrible stuff that gets chucked out in terraces.
Football games.
I remember going to watch my little old club, Oxford United. So a tiny club, I think there's about 5,000 people there. And me and my dad went into the stand. And I was at that point, probably 11 or 12. And I couldn't believe the stick the manager was getting because it wasn't a big stand. It wasn't far away. And I just felt, God. And this is Oxford United, a small club. Yeah. And I just thought at that point, wow, this job, who'd ever want to be a football manager? Because of the stick that flies around. So it does fly around there. Victor Orta should know that. Yeah. And I just thought he kept on and on. And it's like, wow, somebody flipping calm him down, which took a long time. So long way of saying, I agree with you, my friend. Yeah. And it was a bad look. Yeah. You're a director of this club. Mm. Come on, you know.
Yeah.
There's talk about being from a Brentford.
Possibly, I don't know. Maybe we'll find out in the next couple of days. But yeah, not a great look for Leeds off the pitch. But actually did a good job on it. And getting Patrick Bamford back is good news. A couple of other stories, mate, just as we wrap things up. Southampton won, Brighton won. Southampton go ahead to a Brozier goal, lovely finish. Brighton come back to a Mope equaliser late on, 98 minutes of the game. Again, Brighton get something. Mope scored against West Ham and scored against Southampton. But the big story here, Rob, and again, I don't know how much you saw of this, but Alex McCarthy, the Southampton goalkeeper, late on in the game, had a bit of a hamstring injury. Now, didn't say anything to the manager, but I think a few of the players knew. And when Brighton had a free kick late on in the game... Ward-Prowse goes running back to the line to help his goalkeeper out because he knows he's struggling. Ward-Prowse then plays on Mope, who scores the goal. After the game, Ralph Hasenhüttl said he didn't know that his goalkeeper was injured. His goalkeeper should have told him and pretty much threw him under the bus by saying, you know, his ill discipline basically lost us the 3 points. Talked to Tim about it and Tim said, well, he wouldn't have told the manager if it was him in goal. And it's one of the things you take on. He said, I would try staying there and deal with the situation. Listen, there's no right and wrong in this, but I was a bit surprised Ralph Hasenhüttl came public and threw Alex McCarthy under the bus the way he did and made it as public as he did. Rebecca, after the game, said she was okay with it.
Yeah, I don't like that. You know, for in certain situations, not many situations actually, is it okay for a manager to, you know, in terms of trying to motivate some players that need a little bit more of a public kick up the backside, not Alex McCarthy. Mm-hmm. And by the way, that happens a lot. That was a tactic that I remember doing for our team, that the on the end of the ball and you sprint back just to try and get the ball, you know, that corner, which is harder for goalkeepers to get to. So something that happens a lot, unlucky when he's sprinting back out. I mean, I think the rule was when I did it, like, you know, you stay on that post until the ball cleared.
Yeah.
And the ball hadn't really cleared. And he took a gamble to sprint out to try and catch him offside and was a little bit too late. The goal goes in. So I don't even think it was. Yeah, of course. The goalkeeper, he's trying to do his best there. I don't think there's any ill intent there, even if it was a little unprofessional. And maybe the letter of, you know, the textbook thing would have been to go down and get some treatment. So maybe a substitute can be made. But still, it's a legitimate idea to have a guy run back. But I guess it was an emergency situation and he should have stayed on the line, maybe to defend it better. But no, I agree with you. It's a little bit harsh from Hasenhüttl, I think.
Yeah, I think he's just disappointed, obviously, losing 3 points at home. That's a Brighton team who continue to get a few draws and get late goals. Final game, mate. We have to give a mention to the Tomb. So James's Park, Eddie Howe, Newcastle United 1, Burnley 0. Callum Wilson with a well-taken goal after a bit of a goalkeeping error by Nick Pope. Eddie Howe gets the win. The Tomb go crazy. And now they'll believe they can maybe get fourth spot in Newcastle.
Well, yeah, I mean, so it's, of course, really, really important. Good finish, by the way, wasn't it?
Good finish,
Callum Wilson. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't easy to find a way into the roof of the net over the guy that stood on the line. A couple of changes. I see that Miguel Amaron was in the team, Rob.
Yeah.
A little bit of a different setup from Newcastle United. And I think that's right. Eddie Howe's got to make some changes to try and get the best players out there. I think Miguel Amaron is one of their better players and has to find a way in the team. I know there's got to be balance involved, but he gets that balance in the midfield with Shelvey and in that area and a couple of others holding players in there. So I think he should play. I think that looks better with him in it. But it's just, at this point, they had to win. They had to win. Burnley, you know, it's so funny with Burnley because, like, last year, I ran out of, like, you know what, they're going to go down this year. Yeah. I'm talking beginning of last year because I just thought they didn't strengthen enough. They're getting older still, no new players. And they still managed to stay up. So this season, I thought, well, I'm not doing that again. I'm not going to go with Burnley again. Yeah. And this season might be the season that they really struggle. It's going to be an incredible fight down there. Three teams now, Rob, isn't it? On 10 points, I think.
Yeah, 3 points on 10 with Newcastle now. Burnley 10, Newcastle 10, Norwich 10, Everton, Watford on 13, and Everton coming at 15, lead 16. So, yeah, it's going to be tight down there. And as you say, Burnley struggling for goals a little bit. Only 14 goals this season. Chris Wood's got three. Maxwell Cornet's got five. He's a league's club high scorer. But he got come off injured again, looks like a thigh. He looks like one of them who's going to keep picking up muscle injuries, which is not great for Burnley because he is a finisher and he can be a bit of a difference maker. And the McNeils of the world are not really chipping in with goals. So I know what you mean. But I think if I'm a Burnley fan, I'm pleased to hear Tarkowski come out after the game and say, we're an experienced group. We know what we got to do. You know, we believe in the process and the manager, and we'll find a way out of it. So, again, in Sean we trust. I'm not going to go against him, the great man. But I know what you mean. This year starts to feel a little bit different, and you know, they don't want to get themselves cut adrift because I don't see too many goals in this Burnley team right at the moment.
Yeah, and Newcastle back to them on the league table, Rob. Yeah. For them to win their first game of the season into December and now just be 3 points behind Watford, who are the next team up for 17th spot.
Yeah.
Really good chance. Yeah. And it's a better chance than I would have thought given that record to start with. Yeah. And I would think with a couple of players in January and again, I think I said a couple of weeks ago, this team has got the players in it to have a little run, to go for a little run now. It wouldn't surprise me, Rob, you know, actually I've got some really difficult games upcoming.
We've got a load of games,
tough ones. Yeah. But I'll stick with Newcastle going to be okay this season. Burnley, I don't know, I'm not so sure.
Just before close, mate, a little bit of news that's breaking today, just as we got off air, and then we'll probably talk about it in our midweek poddy because we'll have a little bit more about it and obviously Everton play. But Marcel Brands, the director of football at Everton, it looks as though word is that he's going to be leaving the football club. His departure has been finalised, going to be fully announced tomorrow. He joined the club in 2018 as the man who was going to be behind the scenes, getting all the players and doing all the recruitment for the managers. So there's been some fallout at the football club. There's talk of a walkout tomorrow after 27 minutes, I think, at Goodison Park as Everton take on Arsenal. But Marcel Brands, I know, man, you researched a lot and saw a little bit about. Looks like he's leaving the football club. So the first casualty, really, in this situation where Everton haven't been happy with the way things have been going on the pitch.
It's difficult to know exactly what's gone on, right? I mean, he's resigning. All we can do is speculate. Does that mean that Rafa wants more power? Does that mean that, actually, Marcel, let's think about who you've signed, by the way, and some of these players, where are they? Where's Moyes Keane now? And how good's Alex Iwobi doing right now? And this Gibbermin, has had injuries, but not many of his expensive signings, Rob, have been a great hit. And is that part of it? Is it Rafa Benitez that says, why we got this guy? We got a window coming up. I want to. So it's really, really hard. It's really hard to speculate what's gone on. Yeah. But I think directors of football absolutely should be as accountable as managers, coaches, because their job is even more important. For if you're the owner of the club, you as a board of directors, you basically hire the director of football with, like, this is us, this is our identity as Everton Football Club. We want to sign this type of player, and he's charged with them to go and get those. And if those players are not good under one, two, three, four managers, then he hasn't done a very good job, because those players aren't very good for the money he spent. So you have got to have accountability in that position. And we don't often see this, but this is one of those. Again, he might have walked away on his own accord or whatever, but he hasn't done a very good job at the football club.
No.
The players that he brought in will be excelling a lot more than what they really are. So I'm not surprised that he's gone. What happens in the future? Are they going to have a direct replacement? I don't know. Are they going to trust it with Rafa Benitez? What if his form continues to go down and then he goes? So it does put the club in a little bit of limbo right now, whether they're going to stick with the same structure. We know there's varying voices in that in the director's box. David Ornstein, our insider, was talking about and different influences from different sides of things. So power struggle, maybe. A mess, maybe a little bit. The stadium, exciting, but it's restricting the club maybe in the transfer market, and Brands has gone. So, new big story today. Mm. We'll see how that affects going forward.
Yeah, we'll see how that rolls out. They spent $500 million over the last six seasons. Wow. And it's 16th in the table today, five points above relegation. Well, mate, we'll wrap it up there on a weekend when Liverpool left it late. City stole past Watford. Fred fined United to 3 points in the first win for Ralph Ranier. While West Ham and sneaky Spurs keep their hopes of top four spots alive. We'll be back on Wednesday, that's December the 8th, when we'll recap the Everton v Arsenal game and any more so Branch news. And we'll round up all the final games of the Champions League. But for now, I'm Earl. He's Musty, together with the two Robbies. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe and stay healthy. It's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him. Good night.
Good night.